And welcome back, folks, to the Lethal Mullet Network, your place for enjoying all there is to action, film, cinema, and more from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. And of course, hold on to your horses. Grab your six guns, because tonight we're going to check out the Lethal Mullet's favorite western. It just happens to be called Silverado. All right, here we go, out into the wild frontier.
All right, lights, camera, action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
And here we go, episode number 182 of the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Tonight, we're looking at, of course, Silverado, the Lawrence Kasdan Western, one of the greats, folks, from the 80s that was trying to revitalize a genre that would pretty much at this stage, or even the 60s and 70s, was not popular anymore. It was definitely a genre of the 1940s and 1950s, and it's certainly something that Lawrence Kasdan himself has done a number of times now, obviously with Wide Earp as well, and even the cast in this film, Kevin Costner. There you go, folks. Now you realize why I've got the hat on today, because it's a Western day. And I'll tell you what, well, with a Western like this, Silverado in 1985 came along at a time when, you know, we've had Clint Eastwood Westerns that try to revitalize the genre with the Sergio Leone spaghetti Westerns and stuff like that. But we really got a sense of, a change in the 1980s. And a lot of that was with, of course, not only this film, but Young Guns and a number of other films in the 1980s, which certainly revitalized the genre. We even got TV shows which have done that. And even more recently, we've got shows like the early 2000s, like, of course, Deadwood, Hell on Wheels, another one that Lee was talking about the other night here too. But, of course, tonight's one, we're going to be chatting about this bad boy, which I've just finally got a copy of, which is Silverado. Now, folks, if you haven't seen this, this is one of those ones you have to watch on a massive screen. It really is picturesque landscape film. And what I mean by that is the vistas of the New Mexican frontier are just on another level, folks. Starring Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, Rosanna Arquette, John Cleese, Monty Python, right? Kevin Costner, Brian Dennehy, Danny Glover, Jeff Goldblum, and, of course, Linda Hunt, who's actually one of the golden, stars of this one when it comes down to she really is the strength, particularly in the saloon in this one too. This new edition, which, come out, I think it was 2009, so it's been out for a while, but only available out here in Australia till now with, of course, Amazon, which you can find. And it's beautiful, absolutely gorgeous film. You can view the same film right now in the HD and, of course, a Netflix opportunity there with, of course, Netflix subscription and well worth checking out, folks. Why wouldn't you want it with a cast like that?
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
you know, people have asked me, what is it like to, you know, check out one of these sorts of wines? Now, when it comes down to, you know, Westerns, a lot of them is the cast are, you know, quite good, but there's always one lead, one action star, whatever you want to call it, whether going right back to John Wayne and before. But in this instance, in particular this one, this is actually four heroes' journeys in one film, which we'll get to very, very soon. All right. So if you've been watching the show and you want to check out more of them, check out the little ticker down here. This is, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com is where you can find this show and many more like it. Of course, and also here on the other side here, ripple there at the Lethal Mullet on all socials. We're now on, we've got TikTok now, and of course, all the others, of course, Twitter. The Twitter is quite interesting. We're getting some, you know, new people sort of checking out, of course, Lethal Mullet there, and we'll have shows that posted out there you can check out. Of course, this platform here, check us on, of course, Facebook and, of course, Instagram as well. So, we just did a recent episode with, of course, Lee, which covered Heat, Michael Mann's crime thriller with, of course, Robert De Niro and, of course, Al Pacino, which was great. It was a really, really good look at the film, particularly the passion that Lee has for that said film. Is, you know, it's like my passion for Mad Max, you know, which you all know I'm mad about, Mad Max. But of course, you know, with Lee, you know, Lee's really dissected the film down to, you know, its essence of what it is. And it is one of the better crime dramas out there. We've all seen it at different times. And, yeah, great episode. We do have a double episode coming up in the middle of September, coming up very soon. We've already recorded it a couple of weeks ago. And it was all about Cobra Kai Season 5. What we want to see as fans and what we want to see as martial artists. So I won't go into, of course, all the martial arts that Lee's done or that I've done. We've covered that ground too many times on here, and you can go and check out the back catalogue of our episodes if you want to get into those sorts of chats. But I will say that you will get a little bit more insight into Cobra Kai from people who have been doing more martial arts, particularly karate, taekwondo, and, of course, what you're seeing in Cobra Kai is not karate. It is Tang Soo Do. That's right. Korean martial art. It's definitely close to karate. Even some of the forms, the kata, are pretty much straight from Goju-Ryu karate and, of course, Shotokan. You'll see that in Tang Soo Do. Tang Soo Do, of course, is what Chuck Norris learned. Yeah, true story. And, of course, then he made Chun Kok Do, his own style, and many other things that he's been involved in. Of course, trained with Bruce Lee back in the day as well. So all interesting times, all interesting things to check out. All right, so one of the other films I've been asked to talk about too, and depending on whether your listeners want to go in a whole episode of it, we will, is a film called My Science Project. Now, this film, very hard to find. I had to find it through, you know, many different dealers to actually find the film itself, because it's not really available in Australia apart from this distributor I found. And they're called badmovies.com.au. And I tell you, My Science Project was one of the best VHSs I had in the 80s. And it's a lot of fun. We're talking about a film which, you know, is kind of like Bill and Ted's mixed with weird science, mixed with just bizarre fantasy sort of stuff at the same time. You've got Dennis Hopper in there as a mad professor. You've got John Stockwell from Top Gun. Yes, he's the pilot alongside Maverick and Goose at the start of Top Gun when the ships take off and he doesn't want to land. And, of course, he throws in his wings. But he's very good in this. We've got Danielle Van Zernick and, of course, Fisher Stevens. Yes, Fisher Stevens is in this as well. There's a lot of character actors and stuff like that, too, that you find in it. It's definitely shot in and around L.A. But the actual film itself, you only just got to look at some of the gadgets they've got in there, and you kind of see some of the ideas that even Masters of the Universe, the film had, is pretty much taken from that idea. Great film, and look, up to you, listeners, if you want to see that covered here, we will go into full depth. But I will say it is a 4 out of 5 on the Halibut scale. So, you know, if something's above 4, probably worth you checking out, isn't it? All right, so 1985. Out comes Silverado, a love letter to Westerns from both, of course, Lawrence Kasdan and his brother, Mark, who helped him write this film. The film is literally about two brothers, and one called Emmett, who basically is coming to save his brother, played by Kevin Costner, Emmett, played by Scott Glenn. And basically they've got to go over to help their sister, who's in Silverado. And that is pretty much their hero's journey. And we follow them, and through them we meet, of course, Payton, played by, of course, Kevin Kline, in a role that, you know, is different, I personally think, that he's ever done. You know, it's kind of that sort of middle-of-the-road hero, you know, has a very clear idea of what justice is. And, of course, Payton, as we start the film, he is literally left for dead in his underwear and, you know, basically left for dead in the middle of the desert, the New Mexican frontier there, and is picked up by, of course, Emmett on his way in to save his brother. What is funny about this, too, is as the journey goes on, it's very much like a fantasy film or, in this case, for the modern crowd, Star Wars, where we're learning about the world through the journey instead of being given diatribes about what the certain areas are. Oh, look, this is this city, this does this. No, you're learning on the go, and that's what the best thing about it is, as we learn about the characters. So it's very much a media res. We're certainly seeing the conflicts, the bad guys straight away, particularly with, of course, Brian Dennehy, as we meet him through the way too. Again, just as good playing in this Sheriff Cobb. He is a character that's really interesting because he's a villain, but he's likable to a certain extent, but also, you know, there's that real balance. You know, he's a really bad guy, but at the same time, he's doing things to help people. He even helps out, of course, Kevin Kline in this too, as a character, which is interesting. He gives him $13 to get himself some new clothes, etc. But I think what really makes it interesting is that it's a full, very realized character. From there, of course, we meet, of course, Mel, played by, of course, Danny Glover, who actually saves them as they also get in the middle of it in a city where John Cleese is the sheriff as well. And Mel is one of the better characters of this, I've got to say. Danny Glover gets, quite a bit of time in this with a great weapon too, the Henry rifle, pretty much the precursor to, of course, the Winchester, the lever-action weapon. And it's one that stars in there. Now, the other star, of course, is this one here. That's right. Yes, I've got my own version of it too. And that is, of course, the Peacemaker. And you'll see that all throughout this film in particular. This one, of course, is a cavalry model, so it's a little bit longer. But pretty much the Peacemaker is the duck's nuts in this one too. Even to a point where we see Payton try and buy one from a character, actor that we know from, of course, The Running Man. Yes, the Arnold Schwarzenegger film. And he says, tells him he can't have the Peacemaker and he can't rent it. You know, the guns are for sale, which is great. I saw this film first in the 80s, and it was one that I didn't know much about. I was going through a stage where I'd just seen Young Guns, so I was getting really into watching Westerns at the time. They had, Gunsmoke? The movie or whatever it was like a TV movie. They had this on the shelf and a whole bunch of Charlie Bronson films and stuff like that. I do believe How the West Was Won was there as well, which I watched, but none of them were this film. None of them had the sense of adventure characters that you want to come back to. And that's why this, in particular, this film is one that's just great to actually revitalize, you know, the Western genre, because the characters are so likable, which we're going to get into now. But that's pretty much the cups of the film itself is, seeing each of these characters face, tragedy, journey of heroism of themselves, and really be challenged, each of them. That is, Danny Glover, of course, Kevin Kline, Scott Glenn, and, of course, Kevin Costner. But even the smaller characters are all challenged as well, smaller roles. So we've got, everyone around them is challenged. Rosanna Arquette's challenged in the case that she's got her wagon train leading out to, of course, Silverado. And, of course, bandits come across and steal their money and stuff like that. And, of course, it's just up to some of the heroes to help them. But also, you've got characters like even Sheriff Cobb is challenged from time to time. Of course, he takes a different route than the heroes because why? because he's a bad guy. So we see all that too. Very interesting to note too that Brian Dennehy pretty much played a very similar role in, of course, First Blood. Again, that was a sheriff as well, I believe, or at least a law enforcement officer. But I think this character is a little bit more likable than the one we see in, of course, First Blood. He's a very intense actor, and his daughter was also involved in, of course, Star Trek The Next Generation. But, this role, and, of course, I think that boxing movie, The Gladiator, and the FX movies, FX 1 and 2, with, of course, another Brian from out here in Australia, Brian Brown, were also really good. But he played that sort of, again, he played a lot of law enforcement officers. And in FX, he sort of plays the one that's always tracking down the special effects work, of course, of Brian Brown's character when it comes to trying to solve murders and stuff like that. We will be covering FX soon, folks. If you haven't seen them, FX 1 and FX 2, very good films. And Brian Brown is certainly someone that in Australia, obviously, he's one of our better actors, without a doubt. One of the best ones outside of that he's done is Two Hands with Heath Ledger, the late, great Heath Ledger. Very funny crime caper centered around Sydney, if I remember. Well worth tracking down. And as again, it's got some great dialogue in it. And, of course, one of them being about shotguns. He goes, hey, 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 shotties are good, hey. Shotties are good. So look at that too. Now, this film in particular really held my interest, not just due to the characters, but also the setting. The sets of this film are on another level. And, of course, they're all built for the film itself. We've got the Adobe sort of town at the start where, of course, Payden's, trying to get, first of all, his horse back and, of course, get some clothes. But at the same time, we have this great set later on at Silverado, which still used to this day. It was used on The Missing, Young Guns 2, and many other films. There's some great YouTube channels, folks, where you can actually go and check out what these sets to this day look like, which we'll go into very, very soon. But before we do that, let's have a look at some of the cast and just, where you can find this film. First of all, you can find this on, I'm just checking now for you, Netflix in Australia. So whether that's Netflix worldwide as well, you can definitely get it in the Australian Netflix. So good to see. At least it's still available there. We also have, of course, I do believe it was on Prime there for a little while as well. But you can definitely get it via Amazon in Blu-ray edition. I don't know if they've done a 4K yet. This has got the making of Silverado, which is a great documentary from the DVD edition. You can also get a commentary on it. And the commentary has some great historians on not only the genre and the films, but also the real history itself too. Now, of course, this is a fiction. This is not based on anything, but some of the people involved in that commentary really give you a sort of a grounding on what it was like on those sets, the reality of what people are actually wearing in the films. Doesn't really bear a lot of reality in what they were using in real life at the time too. But also just on the stars and what they were using, et cetera, like that on the film. And what the sets are like today. There's a lot of those ghost town-like sets still there, old villages that were made and stuff like that, and left pretty much in the dust. Now, the Western genre is pretty much fried up for now. There's a couple of Westerns here and there, but few and far between. I think the last great one was probably 310 to Yuma, great one. Or, you look at Hell on Wheels, the TV series, with, of course, Captain Christopher Pike of the Star Trek Enterprise. Well, he's always been fantastic, so big shout out to him. But also, Silverado is good for another reason, is the fact that, we get to really see these actors that have massive careers now. As Kevin Klein took off in the 90s, biggest director in the world at the time too, was, of course, Kevin Costner. Coming out of doing The Big Chill in this, and then off to Dances with Wolves, and, of course, Untouchables, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and it just went on and on and on. He's still going today, folks. Kevin Costner. Now he's also on the making of on this. They have a return to Silverado with Kevin Costner. Now he's somebody that didn't think much of the role at the time of what he had there, and it's kind of the as he describes it, the loosey-goosey character of the film, but what's interesting about him is his character is very much one that, you know, you can't play easily. You know, it's one that's either had to be, you know, given a chance, if anything, you know, to show heroism and stuff like that, always in a bit of trouble. But you find out there's a lot more to the character as the movie goes along, which makes it really, really interesting. All right, so with that, let's have a look at the actual cast and, of course, a little bit of information on the film itself. And, you know, at the end of the day, why this film resonates even today. Like, I put out on just the Facebook Lethal page, you know, just to see what people even thought of the film these days. And, of course, our immediate radio crowd, FPN, all love this film. And a lot of people compared to, you know, what is the best of, you know, Westerns at the time. Straight away, people will say, of course, it's either White Earp, Tombstone, or maybe one other. Young Guns came up as well. But, of course, this one came up by, of course, Kevin, the Raider Node Reisel, as his second favourite Western. So I do ask you, Kevin, what is your first favourite? Your favourite. and, of course, Lee Fillingsness loves this film as well. And, you know, folks, this is my favourite Western. You know, and it only took by going back over it today to really enjoy what it is. You know, and it comes down to it. You know, I love White Earp. I love Tombstone. And you know, I love some of the spaghetti Westerns as well. They're not my favourites. But the ones that really resonate with me, and I think it's because I grew up at the time, was the Young Guns films. So Young Guns 1 and 2. And we're still to get Young Guns 3, which apparently is happening. And, of course, we'll be about Brushy Bill Roberts. Now, I do have a book down here, folks, which I'm yet to read. I'm going to get through. And when I do, I'll definitely do another episode, probably on Young Guns 1 and 2 back-to-back. We did one a little while ago in 2020 about Young Guns. But this book here called Billy the Kid, an autobiography, is all about, of course, Brushy Bill Roberts and Billy the Kid. Now, I don't know if you can see a photo there, but that's Brushy Bill right there. And he claimed to have been, of course, living right through to the, I think it was the 1950s, but meant to be Billy the Kid. He was still looking for a pardon from, of course, the governor. He was meant to get a pardon from Governor Lew Wallace. Yes, the man that wrote Ben-Hur. There you go. Now you know. All right. So the film, obviously, produced and directed by Kasdan. And, of course, you know, Mark, his brother, is just as passionate about Westerns. Starring, of course, all the cast that we just talked about. And it was produced by Columbia Pictures and Delphi 3 Productions. And, you know, it's interesting that the film itself still holds up on that original, you know, theatrical release, if you like. It certainly feels it, that's for sure. John Bailey was the cinematographer, edited by Carol Littleton, and, of course, music by Bruce Broughton. I mean, actually, the score is fantastic, folks. It really has a rip-roaring score to it. And, of course, it was released on July 10, 1985. With a budget of $23 million, it did a box office of almost $33 million. So that means, where's our sequels, Mr. Kasdan? You never gave us a sequel. And it was kind of, it was set up to have sequels, as far as I see it. You know, like the characters could have gone on and done at least another one. I don't know what they would have done. But again, Westerns aren't popular. Not anymore. I mean, they're popular with our age groups. You know, these people have grown up in the 80s and early 90s. You know, there was still an interest. But sadly, you know, superheroes and sci-fi and fantasy seem to be pretty much the go these days when it comes down to it. So we have Kevin Kline as Peyton, pretty much the center of the film, the romantic center, if you like. You know, he's a somebody that's enjoying life. You know, no matter what happens to him, you know, it doesn't matter how hard it is, he will just battle on. And he's a likable character. He's really good. But when it comes down to the justice, he is ready to dish out justice with his 45. Scott Glenn is Emmett. Again, similar sort of character. They're serious, but I think Scott Glenn's a bit more wizened about the world. You know, if anything, if there's a Han Solo in this film, it is Emmett. Kevin Costner plays Jake. Now, he's the callow youth. He's, you know, the younger brother of Emmett. And it's a hard role. As I said, like, Kevin Costner plays it well. He's playing this, you know, whimsical character that's pretty much takes anything on a whim. I think that's what made the role interesting. is the fact that through that, we actually get to see some pretty powerful stuff later on. We have Danny Glover as Malachi Mal Johnson. Great in this. It's probably one of the first things I saw him in, apart from probably Lethal Weapon and, believe it or not, Bat 2-1 was about the second film I saw him in. Brian Dennehy, of course, we've already talked about, Sheriff Cobb. Rosanna Arquette as Hannah. I think her role in this this film in particular, you know, she's bringing out a strong performance, but I think a lot was put on, you know, the cutting room floor. I think, you know, if there's ever a director's cut, they'd really need to expand the role of Hannah, without a doubt. Now, John Cleese plays Sheriff Langston. And what's interesting is, I wonder if this is the first time he met Kevin Klein. And, you know, they go off to do, of course, Fish Called Wanda and other films together too. And there was definitely a budding friendship there that started. And, of course, Jeff Goldblum's in this is Calvin Stanhope or Slick. And he's a card player, gambler that comes in and pretty much is on the side of the sheriff in this one. Linda Hunt, of course, you might know from, of course, both Dune, the original David Lynch Dune, and, of course, she was in Kindergarten Cop. You know, she got that famous scene with Arnie goes, "Hey, what can I do for you now?" And then she says, "You know, tell me what it was like to punch that guy when he knocks out the parent in the car park that's causing all the trouble." So great performance by her too. Again, she's one of the centers of this film. There's no getting around that. Joe Seneca is Ezra Johnson, fantastic in this. Ray Baker is Ethan McKendrick. And McKendrick, again, particularly Ray Baker, you'll know him from some other roles. He's done a lot of films. I'll just bring up his stuff here for a second. Now, he's an interesting guy that's just popped up in films that you wouldn't believe. Now, he was in, obviously, Total Recall. In Total Recall, he played a character in that, which was trying to sell, of course, Recall to Doug Quaid, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. But he's been in Gloria, Silkwood, Chud, Places in the Heart, Everybody's All American, Rain Man, he played Mr. Kelso in that, Masters of Menace, Hexed, Hard Truth, Camp Noah, Ed Wood, he was the doctor in that, Hard Rain, of course, and, of course, in What Lies Beneath, Sweet November, and The Trip as well. Just some great roles, folks. And Ray Baker's, you know, again, not somebody that I remembered until I saw this again. So hats off to him. He did really good. Thomas Wilson Brown is Hollis. We've got Jeff Fay is Tyree. Now, Jeff Fay was a real staple of the 90s. Still around today, still doing work. And I think what was great about Tyree is he is pretty much, you know, the nemesis in this. If there's a really evil person, Jeff Fay's one was probably the one. Len Winfield is Ray Johnson. That's Danny Glover's character's sister. Gets quite a bit of time in this. She pretty much comes into the film with Calvin. And from there, she's disenfranchised from the family. In particular, of course, you know, doesn't want to have anything to do with the family. And from, of course, after the father dies, she changes her tune as well too. We got Richard Jenkins as Kelly, Brian James in this, folks, as Hobart. And, of course, you got him trying to find Baxter and Holly. Where damn Baxter and Holly in this? And that's when, of course, they're trying to get a couple of guys to lead them to Silverado for the wagon train they've got. And, again, Brian James, small part, but he's always so damn good, you know, what he does. James Gammon from, of course, the Major League films and he plays Dawson in this. And, you know, he's an interesting actor. He's obviously in this. He's got some great stuff where he, you know, figures out that he's been had by Scott Glenn and, of course, Danny Glover as they're trying to steal horses and, of course, steal back the money for, of course, Patricia Arquette and her family. And he's an interesting actor. He's been in, of course, some Westerns before. And of course, he was also Teddy Roosevelt in the Young Indiana Jones series as well. Fantastic in that one too. Again, great with comic timing. And he was in that Ed Harris film many years later, of course, which is a Western. And the name escapes me, folks, but I'm sure you can let me know in the comments which one that is. now, which brings us to, of course, the weapons segment here, folks. Of course, talking about all the firearms that were used in the film. The first one we're going to talk about, of course, is the single action army. Now, I do have a replica of one here, which is, you know, it's everything bar an actual active barrel. You know, this is all cemented. But these were, you know, single action because they, you would click back the hammer and, of course, one shot per fire. With these are used by the U.S. Army, of course, and many on the frontier, known also as the Peacemaker. This is the weapon a lot of Scott Glenn's character uses. Payden eventually gets his own Peacemaker back, and, you know, they're hefty weapons of the time, six shots. Of course, back in the day, they would not load all six. They would load five, called a cowboy load. And, of course, you get through the port in the side there. You'd load your rounds, of course, at half cock. But you'd leave one spare so you could put it, of course, the pin on an empty chamber so that you didn't accidentally bump it and blow your leg off. Now, of course, believe it or not, even bushrangers in Australia did that, folks. That's right. No, they didn't do the cowboy load. They blew their own legs off because they didn't. That's a true story, actually. So let's have a look at some of this. Now, obviously, the Peacemaker was, of course, mainstay of a lot of Westerns. And that's used at the start. We have Scott Glenn in that little huff house, what do you even call it? And, of course, he's got to take out some of the bad guys. He uses, of course, the quick-firing hammer or fanning, as they call it in the West, and also has a Winchester on him as well. Now, Kevin Costner's character uses a couple of single-action armies, which have very short barrel. They have pretty much the cut down to where little pin is here in their version. And he uses those on a very fancy two-gun rig. So everyone's using pretty much a Peacemaker in this. Even Brian Dennehy's Sheriff Cobb uses a Peacemaker. So there you go, folks. Whether it was as prevalent in the West for real, I mean, who knows? Now, Sheriff Langston uses a British weapon, which goes with the character. He uses an Enfield Mark II revolver, which is a .476 caliber. And you know, a lot of these firearms at the time, right up until, you know, Boer War and, of course, World War I, the Enfield revolvers were used by a lot of the officers and stuff like that at the time too. Now, in this one too, Payden uses a Remington 1875, or he tries to actually buy one, and this is one he picks up, looks at the start. Also used in this is a Remington 1866 Derringer by, of course, Joel Goldblum, as he is able to flick it out under his jacket and out to his hand. And, of course, it's a two-shot Derringer by the look of it, which most Derringers were. A Webley No. 5, another British firearm, was used by, of course, Payden, and the chamber keeps falling out as he's trying to put this thing together. And, of course, it was before he even handed over his money, the gun was already falling apart. The ejector rod was fully falling out. And again, probably not ideal, but he needed it to get his hat and, of course, his horse and everything back. used in this movie also is the Winchester 1866 series Yellow Boy, which was mocked up as a Henry 1860. So it looks like they've taken the Winchester and literally taken all the warding off the front of it to turn it into a Henry rifle. So, again, interesting that they did that and not use the others. But, of course, Henry was the precursor to the Winchester and it was used, as you see it in a number of movies. Ezra Johnson, Joe Seneca plays that role. And, of course, he uses an 1860 Henry rifle that we see in it. Eventually, of course, his character is killed off and we get to see basically Mal use both. You also see, of course, Emmett firing the 1860 rifle when he's trying to train out in the desert. And you got that nice sound on, of course, the lever action there too. I think when I was growing up, I didn't see as many Henry rifles. I always used to see a lot of Winchesters as well. We see in that shop at the start of the film too, some more Winchesters, probably done up more like the others as well. An 1873 Winchester is used by, of course, Emmett at the start of the film. You see him loading up a new load and ejecting one of the brass cartridges at the start there too. And, of course, Roscoe, played by Rusty Myers, uses one as well. And we get to see, of course, Tyree using one too. Now, not a lot said about shotguns in this film or seen in this film either. And, of course, you get to see that in the start. We see a side-by-side Colt 1878 shotgun at the start there as well. But we do get to see them used by McKendrick's thugs, and we see a Stevens & Company 1878 as well too. So, folks, there's a wide variety of frontier firearm at the time there. Now, I think having watched Young Guns and really getting to this sort of this postmodern Western sort of idea, which pretty much Silverado is, folks, you know, at its heart, we get a sense of where things are going forward within the next Westerns and stuff like that, and particularly Kevin Costner, getting back with, of course, Lawrence Kasdan himself and doing their take on the White Earp myth. And it was fantastic. Of course, White Earp and Tombstone are two films which you either like one or the other or you like both. But certain portrayals are popular. And, of course, one of those things being Val Kilmer's take on Doc Holliday, you know, really made that film something to really love. And, of course, you've also got, you know, the take on White Earp by, of course, Kurt Russell, which, you know, I think is the definitive theatrical White Earp, whereas Kevin Costner's got the intensity in his role too. I think if anyone looks more like White Earp, it's Kevin Costner in that film too. But they're just beautiful films, both of them, and need to be enjoyed for what they are. Now, Silverado, this is a whopping 5 out of 5 on the Halimax scale, folks. If you haven't seen it, get it, see it, watch it. Well worth your time. And, of course, your time listening here today on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. So that's us done for the day. I wish you have a great weekend. And, of course, go and check out this film and many others on, of course, Netflix, wherever you can find them. And, of course, check out more podcasts on the Lethal Mullet Network. LethalMulletNetwork.podbean.com and, of course, on socials at The Lethal Mullet. Ciao for now. We'll catch you next time here on The Lethal Mullet.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville Show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.